Now, speaking of reform, if you're looking for something different to read or to follow, you've got to follow the writings of Will Hart. He's a fascinating guy, a writer and photographer who has done a lot of terrific work and has been searching for years for how life originated on Earth and what our human heritage and identity truly is. And I am thrilled that he has agreed to stay up with me on the radio a little bit this morning. Will, thanks so much for joining me on the radio. I'm a big fan of your work.
Well, thanks a lot. And I must say, I forgot our time difference. And when they said Tuesday, well, it was still Monday for me. And then I got a call and boom, here we are.
Well,
so just give me a few seconds here to collect myself. I thought we were doing it in my time tomorrow, but here we are, and let's rock and roll.
Absolutely, Will. Sometimes it takes me 4 or 5 hours to collect myself and finally get on my A game. So no pressure in the least. Now, as I mentioned, you're a journalist. You've been a nature photographer. You've been a filmmaker, and you've been an author. What exactly sparked your interest in how human life on this planet began? And how did you get involved in following all this stuff that you write about and that you make films about?
Very good question. And I don't usually get asked that one because I'll tell you the truth. I happened to be in Europe in the late 1960s and was out one evening and my goodness, here comes something I can't identify in the sky. And I was with a friend who believed in nothing and saw the same thing and was shocked. I was shocked, sort of, but I could accept it. Well, that started the whole process for me, and it just triggered me to start asking questions, and of course the questions just got bigger and bigger, and that was 1968. Early in 1970, I got Eric von Däniken's book. I consider him the pioneer in this field. And, you know, he put it in a format, in a context, in a way that I hadn't really thought of, and nobody had at that time. And it just kept snowballing from there and got more and more interesting, and I gathered more evidence, and then I began writing. That's how the whole thing got started.
We're talking
so it was my own, yeah, my own, yeah, UFO experience. And it's just, and I'll tell you, it's only happened to me a few times, and the last one was about 4 years ago. It's not like I go out and see UFOs all the time. I don't. In 50 years, I've seen three. People say, well, why haven't I seen one? Well, you know, if you live in a city, think about it. If you live in a city and you're very unlikely to see one because you can barely see the stars from most cities. There's so much light. And how often do you get out in the countryside and stargaze? I mean, just look up in the sky. You know, you could be out and just doing your thing, and something might go overhead. You might not ever notice it.
Right.
People think that they should see one, but if you really think of the details of the situation, no, not really. You know, you just don't have that much opportunity. And they're all over the place, but they're not. It's not like they're that. It's not like airplanes flying around.
We're talking with Will Hart. He's the author of the book "Ancient Alien Ancestors: Advanced Technologies that Terraformed Our World." Now, Will, I can understand the interest in UFOs. Even the Pentagon is now acknowledging that videos that people have shot of UFOs are genuine, and they're acknowledging that some video that naval pilots and other military officials have shot that look like UFOs, they've acknowledged those are genuine. When it comes to the subject of human ancestry and what ancient aliens may have done in terms of playing a role in our own human ancestry and our own evolution, that's sort of not necessarily it's not necessarily a next logical step. What can you tell us about your work into alien ancestry, and how did you get started in that area? I guess, as even after a UFO sighting, I'm curious how that is the next leap that gets made.
Well, it was really Eric von Däniken's first book, Chariots of the Gods, that got me on that track. And then by the mid-70s, I was so fascinated that I decided to do my own field research. And I spent a year traveling around Mexico to all of the major and a lot of minor archaeological sites. And to be honest, most of them, I could see where, no, human beings probably did this. You know, I mean, there were many that were still incredible. But let's face it, our ancestors could do some incredible things. But there were some, especially Teotihuacan, which is about an hour outside of Mexico City. That was the last one I visited. And when I went there, I was utterly astonished. And I could sense something about it that just did not feel like people could create this. It's a massive site. And there are three pyramids arranged much like the pyramids are in Egypt. At Giza, there are three major pyramids, and they're spaced the same way, the same alignment. And once I saw that, I realized this is what really grabs a hold of my attention. And then the whole issue, even beyond that, is when you dig into human evolution and human history, you realize that our ancestors agreed many of the early cultures and civilizations, like the Sumerian, the Egyptian, the Aztecs, and so on, talked about gods coming to the earth. And even in the Bible, what does it say? It doesn't say, it says Elohim. It doesn't say God Jehovah. Elohim is the ancient Hebrew word for gods, and not just God. We created man in our image and likeness. Well, that's, to me, pretty plain. And then when you look into genetics, you find there's a lot of fascinating differences between humanity and the great apes. I mean, we're a very different kind of creature. And we can go to that, or we can go to any other. You know, we can go look at things like the Great Pyramid, there's 116 pyramids in Egypt. And we only focused on a few of them, but there are that many there. And the ancient Egyptians had very primitive tools that couldn't possibly create these stones. You can't drag a 100-ton stone. I don't care how many people you have. You can't lift it up. How are you going to lift it and build a structure that's 48 stories tall and stood as the tallest structure on the planet for until over 4,000 years? Well, it doesn't make any sense. How did our ancestors 5,000 years ago build something we probably couldn't duplicate with all of our technology today?
Do you have a theory as to what the purpose of something like the ancient pyramids in say Giza in Egypt might have been?
Sure, I have a theory. The problem is we can't prove it because we can't really build it, and we wouldn't see the purpose for it. Chris Dunn, who was an aerospace engineer, came up with a theory called the Giza Power Plant, and he basically showed that it was some kind of a power generating plant. And I tend to agree with that, because to think that it was a tomb makes no sense at all. It would be the most overbuilt tomb you could ever conceive of. you know, with weighing 5 or 6 million tons, millions of stones arranged in a perfect pyramidal shape. There's so much about the pyramid that people don't think of. And because it's not just the size, it's not just the, all the blocks and all that stuff. It's the precision of the architecture and engineering that makes it so impossible for people 5,000 years ago to have achieved. And the problem we have with our history, and this is where we really get into the nitty-gritty of the situation, historians won't consider the possibility that an off-planet race could have built it. It just doesn't fit in to the model. They only think, well, humans did it. Well, since the Egyptians were, they must have done it, because they don't consider an alternative. But scientifically, and we have to be scientific about it, you have to ask the question. Most engineers who look at it do not think that the Egyptians could possibly have built it, physicists and so on. Like I said, it's too precisely built, and I doubt we could build it today. So what are we left with? Can we prove that another race did it? No, not really. But we can infer it, and science infers a lot of things. You know that. You know about dark matter.
Well, for
that was a huge revelation that they, astronomers came up with. We don't understand, even today, 95% of what's out there in the universe.
Give me your thoughts on the legend of the ancient city of Atlantis. What exactly do we know about Atlantis and its disappearance? And are there any clues that we could find in the present day about what life might have been like in Atlantis?
Well, my view, and I've written about, I haven't published a book yet. I have written a book about it. In my view, and I call it Atlantis Risen, Finding the Lost Tribes, is I look at it historically and genetically. There are actually three different tribes that we know of that are both in Europe and North Africa that don't fit the model. In other words, we're talking about a race of people that look European but don't have the same genetics. And they happen to be the Berbers, who call themselves the Amazigh in North Africa. They were originally white people with blonde hair, blue eyes, brown hair, and so on. They were mixed in that way. But they don't have European genetics. And Europeans were confused by it and always have been, not knowing who they were. And people, the ancient Greeks wrote about them when they traveled in North Africa. The Egyptians wrote about and depicted them. They called them the Westerners because they were west of Egypt, and they were part of creating Egypt. They're still there, and they have the so-called legend, the history of having originated in Atlantis. And then there's the tribes in the Pyrenees that are separate from the rest of Europe and always have been. They have the most ancient DNA. And what links them all is the Rh negative blood type. That's the rarest blood group on the planet. And it is a universal donor blood group, which means that it is the most ancient blood, because all the rest of the blood types evolved after it and were as mutations. So it's that blood type is used because every other blood type accepts it as self.
You write,
and all you have to
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
And that's the key. Now there are other things too. There are trying to explain. I don't know if you know what dolmen are, and I'm sure you know what stone circles like Stonehenge is.
Sure.
And dolmen are just they're primitive looking. It's just a structure that has two sides to it, a very large stone, sometimes 50-ton stones, and then across the top, it'll have a cross member. and it can be, you know, 50 or 60 tons. They look primitive, but they're not primitive at all, because our archaeologists and historians say that these were built, you know, 6,000 years ago to 8,000 years ago. Well, nobody's ever explained how Stonehenge was actually built, because the stones from Stonehenge were taken, were quarried 100 miles away, and then had to be supposedly dragged over hill and dale 100 miles and constructed, you know, re-erected with a cross member across the top to form a trilithon, which is, and then in that circular formation. Nobody explained how that was done. When they tried to duplicate it, and every time that Egyptologists have tried in Egypt to duplicate what they claimed the Egyptians did, they failed. Nobody has ever been able to show how early human beings could lift monstrous stones. Well, they couldn't, the fact is. Well, we have to get scientific. If they could do it, show me, duplicate to the public and show the public how this was done. Or let's get serious and scientific about this whole issue, admit that it couldn't be done, and go from there. That's all I'm asking our so-called scientists, which I don't consider archaeologists are, because they're not physicists. They don't have to prove anything. They can say anything. They don't have to prove anything. And that's a flaw in our academics.
So
if we want to get serious about history and know where we came from and who's been here on this planet, we've got to take this more seriously.
So
that's what I'm trying to do is raise these issues and ask these questions.
Well, when we see UFO sightings and we hear reports of extraterrestrials, you believe that there's a good chance that that species could actually be our ancestors.
Yeah, let's think about it. Let's tie some things together. Let's go back to the 1940s in New Mexico. What happened in the 1940s in New Mexico? Because that's where the sightings started. The first mass sightings
occurred.
Yeah, in Roswell. There were several others. One of them was Aztec, which is even more profound than Roswell, but never got the press. But they started. What happened in northern New Mexico? Alamos Lab, the Manhattan Project. As soon as we fiddled around with nuclear energy, that's when they showed up, and they showed up right where it was done. And what was Roswell? That was the 509th, the air command that delivered the atomic bomb to Japan. That's what Roswell was. It was the home base of the atomic bombs. So a lot of times people don't make all these different connections. And we know, and, you know, commanders of bases have proven it, have shown that UFOs have demonstrated to the military they can shut down our nuclear facilities anytime they want to. And they have shut them down. So it began there, and it actually began with an incident over Los Angeles called the Battle of L.A., in which over Santa Monica, a UFO hovered for about a half hour. And this was during World War II, so, of course, they thought it was a Japanese attack on Los Angeles. And they called out a battery to an artillery battery to, you know, blow the thing out of the air because it was just sitting there. Well, they pelted it with artillery for a half hour. The shells back to the ground. They came back to the ground. They were all over the beaches the next day. Tens of thousands of people witnessed this event. It was front page news in the LA Times the next day. That was actually the first major UFO sighting event documented by the military. The problem was there was no history of UFO sightings. There were no investigators, no organizations that kept out. So it was just forgotten. And that's actually what happened with Roswell. at that time, too, was just forgotten because, same thing, there was nobody to investigate it. It just went away. And then decades later, Jesse Marcel came out. He was the intelligence officer that had seen the debris from the UFO, and he told the story. He told the true story, and then it came out. So the history of just of UFOs itself is fascinating.
Now that's for sure. Well, so what is the next step? So we're talking with Will Hart. He's the author of the book Ancient Alien Ancestors, Advanced Technologies That Terraformed Our World. What is the next step in terms of your own research and where you think we should look next to get some clues as to humanity's origin and maybe even humanity's future?
Good question. The next step, in my view, is we've got to revise our. And I know that astronomers and astrophysicists and the whole field is in a real flux because we need a different model of cosmology, of what the cosmos and our place in it is. And we're going to have to grapple with that because what physicists have done is they've given the public the wrong impression of how much science actually knows who we are and what our place in the cosmos is and what the cosmos even is. And what I mean by that is, like I was referring to dark matter and dark energy, that's just actually an admission of our ignorance. We know very little in truth. So that's where I think we have to start is reformulating. And science, I'm sure you know this, that science for many decades now, scientists agree that there has to be, statistically, there has to be more civilizations out there in the universe. Because the universe is just so big, so many trillions of planets. Of course, we're not the only ones with life on it. So we know that, but they would agree with me. Yeah, sure, there's life in the universe. Okay. And other intelligent life. Yeah, and some are probably more highly evolved than we are. But what they don't agree with is that they ever came to this planet. That's where the disagreement is.
In terms of your book, which I do recommend if people are interested in this subject, you indicate that you think that the extraterrestrial intelligence that might have been responsible for some of these ancient wonders that you've cited and which could be the ancestors of those with Rh negative blood, you indicate that you think they may still be playing a role in terms of influencing events on Earth. Is that primarily manifested through dealings around nuclear bases and things of that sort, or is there more than that?
Well, and part of this is conjecture. I would say that their role changed from progenitors. They don't exactly, ultimately, and I happen to be a person of faith, a God, however you want to define that term, because it's a very loaded term, some supreme intelligence created the universe, but it remains a mystery. Okay, now we come down to our level. Some other civilization that was human-like or very close to us with the type we have their DNA to a degree. We're not totally the same. To a degree, we have their DNA. Already evolved because the universe is billions of years old, 15 billion. It might be older than that. Even 15 billion. Earth didn't start evolving. Earth wasn't here. Now it's been 4 billion years. So other civilizations could have advanced billions of years before us. And what they would be like, we can't possibly imagine what they're really like and how much knowledge and power they have. But it's possible we're living in their solar system, in their galaxy. They could have reached a point, which is what we'll try to do eventually. And we're at a very primitive level now. We're going to try to harness the energy of the sun. We're going to try to understand all the dynamics And we're already on the path that they took of exploring space and so on. And we did it pretty quickly once we got the right technology. And now we're moving very fast with all of this, especially with artificial intelligence, because we don't know what it is. And we don't know how close to this artificial intelligence we already have is to the type of intelligence that created us. So we're in this strange kind of threshold right now, and I think most people feel it. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking on the one hand, because we have a certain amount of knowledge and we have a glimpse of this. Even in our science fiction, we get a glimpse of something greater and something pretty fantastic, but we can't wrap our minds around it enough to really understand it and to go. And if people say, well, look, if these guys, these aliens are really out there, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? Well, folks, if you've studied the history of UFOs, you'll realize they buzzed the White House in 1952, two successive weekends, and we dispatched jets to chase them, and they couldn't catch them. And everybody in Washington saw it and didn't know what to make out of it. So they have done that. They've made themselves very well known. But the problem now is we're not the ones in control. And we don't like that. We don't like that thought. We like the thought that we're in control of the planet. We don't like the thought that somebody's above us in this scheme of things. So that's a psychological adjustment we've got to make. And I don't know. People say, well, is humanity ready for it? I don't think so right now. We're ready for as much information as we're getting. And we're getting it, because you pointed it out at the beginning of the show. That, you know, the Pentagon now is actually, after, you know, 60, 70 years, starting to admit, well, okay, we do have a lot of evidence. Oh, finally. Thanks, guys. So what else are you withholding?
Yeah, isn't that the question? Mr. Hart, we're going to have to leave it there, actually. We're just about out of time, but I hope you'll come back soon. And definitely I'll encourage everybody that's interested in this subject to check out your book, Ancient Alien Ancestors, Advanced Technologies That Terraformed Our World.
Well, thank you a lot. I enjoy it and our talk, and I appreciate your questions. They're very sharp.
I appreciate that. Will Hart, if you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I hear the music playing. Speaking of music, if you're a fan of Sinatra music, you're going to want to listen to Joe Piscopo every Sunday night on Ramsey's Mazda's Sundays with Sinatra from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. He plays great music and tells great stories. Until next hour, keep asking questions.